Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It's Mark and Kitchen.
The reason Belichick is the greatest football coach who ever lived by far is because he takes no one for granted. He doesn't take the Bengals for granted. It's a first-year head coach.
Okay.
So you're looking for information. And then he'll find the signal from the noise later. But first, he wants the information.
Hey, I guess they're right. Senior citizens, although slow and dangerous behind the wheel, can still serve a purpose.
So Belichick takes no one for nothing for granted, which is why they're great. Now, that said, we need to spy on the Bengals to beat them? No, they don't need to, but they do. That's why they beat everyone so often.
Look, God, the reason we're here is we wanted to tell you to stop messing with the Patriots. Please, God, we're begging you, leave football alone. It's all we got.
On Sports Radio 103.7 WEEI.
I would like to say it would be nice if, you know, every so often one of these wide receivers could get open from the huddle. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Where they don't have to have some unbelievable read and be on the exact same page as Tom Brady at the line of scrimmage during a check.
Why didn't you just go home? That's your home. Are you too good for your home? Answer me!
Mix it up a little bit. Doing it on the first drive isn't really establishing it in the game. You have to do it on the first couple of drives and really start to establish it and change the way the defense is approaching you. That's what you have to do.
You didn't!
I did.
What you say?
I did this.
What does this mean, man? Speak English to me.
That means I go this way and you go this way.
I go that way, you go this way.
Yes.
Okay.
Now, it's time for Mark and Kitchen on Sports Radio 103.7 WEEI.
Coming at ya!
All right, hour two of the Mark and Kitchen Show, 103.7 WEEI, 401-737-1287 is the phone number. You can text 37937. Mark Dondero, Ben Kitchen. Looks like the Baltimore Ravens will be the number one seed in the AFC playoffs, barring some catastrophe. They've got it all but wrapped up. I don't know who they play next week, but they got 10 days until they play them, and they're rolling.
Cleveland.
They did lose to Cleveland. Cleveland's hot a little bit. But, yeah, they're going to be Cleveland. They're going to get the number one seed.
Okay. They got Cleveland and Pittsburgh to round out their schedule.
One thing I just wanted to discuss briefly is how amazed I am at the reaction nationally to Lamar Jackson. We've heard the expression before, prisoner of the moment.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering, has this country ever, with anybody else, especially in football, become prisoner of the moment harder, if that makes any sense, than they have with Lamar Jackson? Because he has just swept up everybody. I mean, you see the video online, all the Jets players lining up to get his autograph and his jersey. I mean, just incredible. The media, the fans, everybody in love with what Lamar Jackson has done this year. And give him credit. He is the MVP. He has earned it. He has been awesome. But I'm just shocked, Ben. I'm shocked because this is a guy, and correct me if I'm wrong, Lamar Jackson is a better runner than he is a passer. And to me, that's a problem. He's still a quarterback. I think that this is more about, Lamar Jackson has been great. Like I said, he's the MVP. But this is more about the Baltimore Ravens and what they were able to do to tailor their entire organization, both schematically and from a personnel standpoint, to Lamar Jackson's skill set. That is the most impressive thing. Lamar has been great. He's the MVP.
Mm-hmm.
But what they have been able to do there, he's a better runner than he is a passer, and it's still quarterback where passing is the main thing. That's like being a singer, a musician, but being most known for your dancing and being a better dancer than you are a singer. I feel like that's a problem, ultimately. That's going to catch up to you at some point. Lamar Jackson hasn't played off schedule this entire season. And I think that's because the Ravens have been so far ahead of everybody else with their schemes and their running game with three tight ends that they've been able to be in control of every game. We'll see if that lasts through the playoffs once they face some teams a second time around. some good defenses a second time around. We'll see. But they haven't been off schedule at all. And if you really watch the tape, Lamar Jackson, when he has been in obvious passing situations, he hasn't just been not as good. He's been bad in obvious passing situations, 3rd and 9, 3rd and 11, when they drop him back in the pocket and throw. He's been bad.
Here's one of the things I look at with him, and I'm very impressed with him. He's only had 3 games this season where he's thrown an interception. 3 games. He threw 3 in one game that they ended up beating the Steelers in. He's only thrown had three games with an interception. So he's making pretty good decisions. You're saying 3rd and long, not very good. Sure, I'm with you on that, but he's not making mistakes. And that's the thing I look at him and go, I'm very impressed with. But to your original point when you brought it up in terms of the national media falling in love with the guy, I don't know if it was quite at this level, but I remember it being pretty big, was RG3, his rookie year. And people were kind of blown away by what he was doing.
Wasn't at this level.
I can't remember if it was or not. It then seemed it like it was close.
If you don't remember, it wasn't. It definitely wasn't.
Well, I don't remember what the public national reception of Vic was at the I just don't remember. I have certain things in my life that cause me to not remember things as well as I used to. So I can't recall it, but I mean, RG3, I don't think was getting MVP hype the way Lamar is right now. And when I look at Lamar, when I compare the numbers, I'm just even more impressed with what Lamar did. But guys like RG3 always make me fear for someone like Lamar and go, you're running so much. When's that big hit going to take you out? When's that big hit going to hurt your knee and now you're not an effective runner anymore?
Running so much and not sliding. He is running like a running back. He is absorbing the contact.
To me, I'd just give him the tape of Russell Wilson. Be like, can you just do what he does? Slide.
Yeah.
Just protect yourself because we need you more than anything. Please protect yourself. That extra 3 yards isn't worth you missing 3 games.
Yeah.
So I would like to see him add that into the equation for him, but what's working for him right now is what's working for him. But on the other side, we've seen this happen a lot in sports. When other teams don't have a good scouting report on you yet, it's harder for them to figure you out. And we're going to see that with Lamar through the rest of the season likely. But next year, maybe even in the playoffs, you're going to start to see teams figure it out and learn how to adapt and evolve and figure out ways to stop him. You know, I always liken it to a hitter that's coming up from AAA and has a hot month. Well, the pitchers haven't seen him yet, so they don't know necessarily exactly what kind of pitch is his kryptonite. And once they do, things look very, very different. We've seen that a lot with the Red Sox players come up from AAA, and major league pitchers don't have a good scouting report on him yet. And then once they finally figure it out, after a number of appearances, they can shut them down pretty easily. So let's see how that plays, because even though he's had more time than a lot of these guys have, I'm still curious as other teams starting to pick it up.
You said that he has how many interceptions this year? 3?
He has 6, but he's only had 2 in one game, 3 in another game, and then he had 1 a week ago against Buffalo. That's it. So he had 3 against Pittsburgh in week 5. He had 2 against Cleveland that they lost that game in week 4, and then he's had 1 in week 14. Every other game, he has not thrown an interception.
Okay, so he's making good decisions. He has limited interceptions this year. But I think a big reason for that is because every time he throws the ball, seemingly, he's throwing it to wide open receivers. Why? Because the defense is so focused on stopping the triple option, the pistol, the running game, his running attack. They're letting guys, they're not as good at finding the guys who are running down the field because they got so many other things going through their mind. But I think, like you said, when guys, when teams, when coaches, when everybody around the league starts to zero in on what they're doing when they have time, which is tough to do between Monday and Wednesday or Wednesday and Friday when you're practicing, they're going to start to figure them out a little bit and discover some trends and figure out what works, and they'll get some guys in there that are better fits personnel-wise to stopping what the Ravens do, especially teams in their division. Then all of a sudden you have a little bit of a blueprint, and it's not as easy to run, which makes it not as easy to throw. I think he has so much success throwing the ball, especially this year, because he's had so much success running the ball. That's something that I think will dwindle, and that's why the numbers are so damn impressive. The fact, here's the other problem with the passing game or lack thereof. Are they really going to get that much better at it? Because you only have so much time to practice, and they're practicing all these runs with three tight ends and a fullback defensive lineman playing fullback or whatever. You don't have time to practice this really complex, sophisticated passing game where you can really master that side of the offensive football. So there's just a lot of things that worry me about Lamar Jackson. I know I compared him to Limp Bizkit and Fred Durst. But going forward, I think if the Ravens start getting down in games, we'll see what happens in the playoffs, and if they're down two scores in the second half, and all of a sudden that offense is forced into throwing situations, I think it's going to start to look ugly, real ugly, fast. And it's going to go downhill for them the wrong way, fast, because they're going to be forced into throwing. And I can't believe a lot of these people that are praising Lamar Jackson day in and day out aren't talking about this more. He's a better runner than he is a thrower, and they've never been behind or off schedule. I just can't believe, I just don't know how he's going to continue to do this year in and year out, running the ball, dominating on the ground, setting rushing records, and never be forced into a situation where he has to throw. Because when he has been in those situations, it's been bad. It's been ugly. And I'll be honest with you, at the end of the day, I'm not sure he's going to wind up with a better career than Cam Newton.
Well, I'm not positive about that either, but here's a couple of things that are going for Lamar Jackson. You're talking about limiting those throwing opportunities. The reality is he's not throwing that much. He hasn't had 30 attempts in a game since week 6 against Cincinnati. It was 20, 23, 17, 24, 20, 23, 25, 23. So he's not asked to throw a lot, and partly because he can pick up yards and gain momentum for his offense with his legs. He doesn't need to. Plus, on top of that, they have a capable running back in Mark Ingram, who's a 1,000-yard rusher. I think he's got 900-some-odd yards right now, but through the next two games, he'll probably break through that 1,000, maybe be at 1,100 yards rushing. So then you have two 1,000-yard rushers on your team. All those things you said, I think, are true to a certain extent. But I think what's really smart about what the Ravens are doing is that they have figured out a way of saying, okay, we can pick up yards here with his legs. We don't have to ask him to throw too much. And we can score with our running back and with the legs of our quarterback. And those are helping our wide receivers and our tight ends get open so we can make smarter decisions. They've created a very solid offense for the personnel they have. And that's one of those situations, going back to an earlier point of yours with regards to N'Keal Harry and the Patriots. Build your philosophy around the talent you have. And that's what the Ravens have done, and I really like that, and I respect the hell out of that with the Ravens. I wish Josh McDaniels would do a little bit more of that here and say, this is the talent we have. This is actually might not be what we've always done here, but this is what's going to make us most successful, is catering a little bit to this talent.
We talked about that last week, didn't we?
Yes.
Taking a page out of the Ravens book and doing what they did. Yeah, exactly. So let me just say one more thing about this point on Lamar Jackson. If you really watch the throws he makes,
yes,
some of the throws down the field, some of the passes to the tight ends in the flat and this and that, coming off of play action, does he really make a ton of throws that Tim Tebow couldn't have made?
Tim Tebow, yes, he does make throws.
I don't agree.
He was the worst NFL quarterback I've ever seen throwing a football.
He was
the worst.
Lamar Jackson is a way better thrower of the ball, throws a prettier ball, tighter ball, quicker release, all those things. But the actual throws, if you watch the throw that Tebow made to Demaryius Thomas in that playoff game.
That was a good throw. Every dog has his day.
I feel like those are the throws that Lamar Jackson makes. They were so predicated. They were so concerned on the run, Pittsburgh's defense. The safety came down. Thomas was on the slant, and they were able to get it to him, and he ran forever because the safety came down. That's what I'm saying. Tebow, if you put Tebow out there with three tight ends and ask him to throw little things in the flat or little, not throws, into double coverage, down the seam, from the shotgun, the Brady and Rodgers throws. Tebow could have done something in that offense. Tebow could have ran that offense. He was running it in Denver, took them to a playoff win in Denver. And, I mean, they didn't even fully commit like Baltimore.
First of all, he didn't take them to that. He made a good play at the end there that led to that touchdown, but it's not like he was – that defense was really good, people were forgetting about.
The defense was really good.
And there was a ton of weapons with your wide receivers at that point for the Broncos. So it's not
But I'm just
as
saying,
cut and dry
for,
is that.
For that stretch of games, the Broncos tailored what they were doing as much as they could to Tebow because he was so limited.
Mm-hmm.
The Ravens did the exact same thing. They spent the offseason planning.
Yeah.
They probably have better coaches in place with Greg Roman, his success in the past with running quarterbacks and all that, Kaepernick. And Harbaugh's a better coach than whoever was in Denver.
And Lamar Jackson's better as a pro
Lamar
quarterback
Jackson's
than
a better athlete, better quarterback.
Significantly better athlete.
Way better athlete, better quarterback. The only thing maybe you argue Tebow had over him was he was a house, so he could absorb some of the hits that Jackson takes. But he's better in everything. Throwing the ball, Jackson, throwing the ball, athlete, speed, obviously. And the Ravens have fully committed, a more competent coaching staff has fully committed. They're essentially, though, doing the same thing. I think if you would put Tim Tebow in this situation, he would have had success. Now, he probably wouldn't be 11-2 blowing out the best teams in the league. That Ravens team, I think, still goes to the
and
playoffs.
He wouldn't be nearly as accurate on some of those easy throws as Lamar Jackson has been. Lamar Jackson's a much better throw of the football.
You got to watch the tape.
I did, trust me.
You got to watch him throw the ball.
Yeah, but no, you have to go back and watch Tebow and remember how bad it was.
Sure, I'll do that.
That's, I think, where we need to come to an accord here. Maybe I will watch a little bit more Lamar, but if you're going to compare him with Tebow, go back and watch more Tebow. It was really bad.
I don't think Lamar Jackson's very good throwing the ball.
The results say otherwise.
Yeah, I don't think he's that good.
I mean, he's completing his passes.
He is.
That's all that matters.
He is.
That's all that matters.
We should look up some numbers.
With regards
well,
to?
Well, I guess we don't need to look up some numbers, but it would be fascinating to study the tape just to see what type of throws the two of them made.
Tebow didn't make many throws.
I know.
He was really bad as an NFL player throwing the football. I'd take Mohamed Sanu as a thrower over Tim Tebow. I'm just comparing another college quarterback to Tim Tebow. Sanu right. would throw better. Edelman would possibly throw better consistently than Tim Tebow. He was really not good.
Tebow was more like a read option quarterback.
Tebow was a big boy, and the part of the problem why he was so effective in college versus the pros is in the pros, you're playing against much bigger guys. So that big body that you talked about that can absorb those hits, which is good, he can't take advantage of it on an NFL level where he could take an advantage of it even in the SEC, where he's playing against much smaller competition. You maybe have one guy that's a big 300-pounder that can punish you versus an NFL defense where you've got four or five of those guys.
Yeah.
Tebow was made to be a college quarterback, and he was unfriggin' believable at that. He was so good, and he was a ton of fun to watch, but those skills did not and could not translate to the next level.
See, I think you think that Lamar Jackson is a totally different animal than Tim Tebow. He's faster.
Yeah, because Tebow's wasn't really an overwhelming threat with his legs. He just wasn't.
Right.
At the pro level.
Right.
Because he wasn't fast enough truly to hit that edge the way that Lamar Jackson. He was certainly not elusive like Lamar Jackson.
No.
Don't get me wrong. Tebow was fast, but not in the same category as Lamar Jackson.
And Lamar is
he was more like Roethlisberger in terms of his athleticism early in Roethlisberger's career, which I think people forget that Roethlisberger was a big boy, and he was actually a lot bigger than Tebow, who had some wheels.
Remember that game against the Jets, though? I think it was a Thursday night game where he won it on he went around the corner and broke the edge and scored from 25 yards out on a run. I mean, he could run a little bit. He had some speed.
No, he's not Lamar Jackson.
Lamar Jackson's better.
But where Tebow was taking advantage of college teams was running up the middle.
Okay.
And you're not going to have a ton of success as a quarterback continually doing that at the NFL level.
Yeah.
Whereas Lamar Jackson's so fast and so elusive that he can do that for a while.
Okay. Fair enough. All right, let's take a break. When we get back, we'll talk. I'd like to get to some other stuff. We'll see where we are when we get back. This is the Mark and Kitchen Show, 103.7 WE.
We're back to Mark and Kitchen on Sports Radio 103.7 WEEI.
Another one bites the dust.
All right, back here on the Mark and Kitchen Show, 401-737-1287. I don't want to make it sound like I don't like Lamar Jackson because I think he does a lot of things that I do like. I know he does. His teammates love him.
Yep.
He creates a good culture in the locker room. Mm-hmm. I think that's a really good thing that he does. That's a big positive. He stays humble. He says the right things. He's an adult. And I think that offense that they run, the smash mouth kind of style, helps the defense. It creates a culture defensively, too, because you're a tough physical football team, and that helps the defense.
Well, it allows for time to tick off so the defense doesn't have to spend as much time on the field, which is always one of the best elements for a good defense, is an offense that can at least control the time.
The last thing I'm going to say about Lamar Jackson, like I said, I don't want you to think I don't like Lamar Jackson, but I look at him this way. It's like if you had a daughter who was in college. She'll say she was in college. And there was this guy that lived near her, neighbor, that she's known for a long time. And he's a good guy. You like him. Nice kid. Great guy. You get along. But his passion in life is he wants to go to Africa to save the endangered wildebeest.
Okay.
I like him. He's a good guy. I respect what he wants to do. But I don't want my daughter to marry him. You know, I like Lamar Jackson. I like a lot of the things about him. But the way he plays, that style of football for a quarterback, I don't want that on my team. I don't want to be with
that. It doesn't last a long time.
No.
It just doesn't last a long time. And we have plenty of guys that we can look at through the years and say, that type of style doesn't last all that long. There's a couple of guys who got away with it. But when you look at how they evolved as a quarterback, it was very different from what you saw early on. Steve Young, a guy who could run and was very tough. One of his best highlights is him running without a helmet on.
Yeah.
And you had other guys, Roger Staubach, who would run a lot and was a little reckless. He was more like Lamar Jackson, not quite as fast or as explosive as Lamar, but he would run a lot and he would take big hits. So there's a comparison there. But later on in his career, he was smarter about how he utilized his leg and relied more on his arm. And then we've seen some of these other guys that just take hit after hit after hit as runners and then just can't do it. Russell Wilson's evolved. He's become a smarter runner. Aaron Rodgers has become a smarter runner. Cam Newton doesn't do it all that much anymore. He got a little smarter. Why? Because he kept getting friggin' hurt.
Yeah. And just real quick, a note, nothing I said about Lamar Jackson had anything. I didn't even go near the injury thing. I didn't even talk about the injury risk or the risk of injuries or getting broken down because of all the hits. I was just talking about play on the field. Obviously, the risk of getting injured is a thing for him. All right, you want to move on and talk a little Celtics?
Yep.
All right, so they lost to the 76ers the other night. That pissed me off. Bad loss. Is it okay to say that was a bad loss? That was a disappointing loss? That was a bad, disappointing loss. That's a team that you're playing. That's a team that, you know, the Sixers are going to be there at the end of the year. And they have had issues with you for a few years, especially at TD Garden. I think you would have won 6 of the last 7 games there at TD Garden. You let them come in after losing to them early in the season on the first night. They make a statement. Then they come in. You haven't lost at home. You've got most of your guys there. I know Marcus Smart didn't play, but you've got your guys. Hayward's there. They're not playing with
Horford.
Horford, he's out, and you lose. That is a disappointing loss to me. Don't suffer your first loss of the season at home to the Sixers, who have had issues beating you. Now they have more confidence. Now they think they made a little bit of a statement, and they're feeling themselves a little bit. Don't lose that game to the Sixers at home to suffer your first loss. That was disappointing.
Wow, there was a lot of things that were a little disappointing coming out of that game. Jason Tatum just having an off night until the very end of the game when he hit 2 big threes.
Yeah, but 0-for-7 in the third quarter is not going to do it.
You can't be inconsistent like that if you want to go and brag and boast and talk about being an all-star just before that game, a couple days before that game, and then put up a stinker in that one. Which is funny because hopefully he learned the Embiid lesson a little bit. Because what happened with Embiid just before he played that game against the Celtics? Shaq and Barkley ripped him a new one, deservedly so, and saying, hey, if you want to be a dominant player, you got to do it at night in and night out. You can't just pick and choose when you want to do it. And hopefully Jason Tatum hears that and takes that on board. Hey, if you want to be a dominant player, you got to do it night in and night out. You can't just come and go as the win. Have a good game here and then have a couple bad quarters over here. No, you got to be consistent. And right now, Tatum is not consistent enough. He needs to get there. He needs to take that next step in his game. And if he doesn't, they're going to be in this weird middle position for a long time.
And let's not forget about Jaylen Brown in that game. Not good. 3 of 9, 8 points, minus 14 for Jaylen Brown.
He just outright disappears sometimes too. There's times when you'll go possession after possession after possession and forget that Jaylen Brown's even there. Now, Jaylen Brown, I like both these kids a lot. They're good players. Jaylen Brown has shown me a hell of a lot more as a pro than Jason Tatum has, because Jason Tatum came into the league as a somewhat polished offensive player. Now, he has developed his game a little bit. He's become a better defender. He's become a better distributor. But Jaylen Brown has taken far more steps as a professional to improve his game than Jason Tatum has. And I love that about Jaylen Brown. He's become a damn good player. He's a much better defensive player than Tatum, although Tatum's a decent defensive player. But who are you going to put, who are you going to say, hey, I need you to guard the other team's star when Smart's not on the court? Yeah. Jaylen Brown.
Yeah. One issue is that the Sixers have basically shown you that if they decide that they want to, what's the word I'm looking for, remove Kemba Walker from the basketball game, they can do that. If that's what they decide to do. And in those instances, Jason Tatum has to step up. He didn't step up enough the other night. So that was a problem. Has your opinion of the Celtics changed at all over the last week, handful of games, the loss in Indy, the loss of the Sixers, overall, looking at how things have evolved throughout the league, the Bucks, the Lakers, has your opinion of where they can end up changed at all?
No. No, because the playoffs is such a different animal. And when you look at the 76ers, and I look at that team, and yeah, they were shooting pretty well the other night.
You're not going to accept Mike Scott
to do that and have 15 points from behind the line night in and night out. That's certainly not going to happen. When you get to the playoffs, the Sixers have problems. So I still look at the Celtics as being an Eastern Conference finalist with the Milwaukee Bucks. Now, if anything's changed for me, it's watching the Milwaukee Bucks just dominate and the way Giannis has taken his game to another level. So I have a little more fear because of the way the Bucks have taken that next step when I thought they were going to take a slight step back. But with regards to the Celtics themselves, no, I still think they need a couple of things. They need someone who can defend some of these better low post players like Joel Embiid, because Joel Embiid ate their lunch the other night, and Daniel Tice can't handle that. Robert Williams, maybe a little bit, but you still need some size down low that can guard, because Enes Kanter, that's not his game. He did what he was supposed to do. He scored, get some rebounds. He tried defensively, but he's just not good at it. So you still need someone that can handle that a little bit if you're going to want to get by the Sixers in a seven-game series. Because it's not just that guy. It's also Al Horford, who we didn't see the other night. So, no, I'm still in the same place with the Boston Celtics as I have been for the last couple of weeks. If they want to go to that next level, they're going to need an additional big body.
Would you trade Gordon Hayward to get that big body?
Depends on what that big body is.
Would you trade Gordon Hayward for Steven Adams? That was brought up.
That's interesting, but I don't think so.
I would not. Not for Steven Adams. I would not.
Because Hayward's going to be an advantage over teams when it comes time for the playoffs to have two guys that can create their own offense in Kemba and Hayward and distribute as well as they can and run an offense. It's going to be very helpful for the Celtics to have those two guys. Steven Adams, no, but if you were saying, hey, Hayward's in a package for Karl Anthony Towns?
Oh, my gosh.
Hell yeah.
That, yes.
Without a doubt. But
is that realistic?
Well, it's not overly unrealistic because it's the NBA. And if a star player is in a bad position, a bad situation, they want the hell out of there. And there's not much you can really do. So
get Lizzo to some games, a few more.
Get Lizzo to a few more games, and have her twerk. Gross. But no, I don't feel any differently about the Celtics right now. There's other teams I look at that have done more and become better than what I thought they would be. Miami is even better. I thought they were going to be good, but I didn't think they were going to be this good.
Are they a problem?
They might be a problem. One of the reasons I see Miami being a problem is because they have the flexibility to make deals and to improve.
Honestly?
Whereas Philly doesn't really. Milwaukee doesn't really. Yeah, and Celtics aren't in a great position.
I think Indiana is a problem. I mean, when they get Oladipo running again,
they're going
to
be
a problem. That's a good team. They're a good team. It's a good team. I mean, they're not going to be an easy out. Let's talk to Mike in North Providence. Mike, good morning.
Hey, guys. Yeah, this is with response to you just talking about Brown and Tatum. In this past game, what happened is what happens all the time on this team, where they just simply forget that Brown's even there. For massive stretches of the game, they do nothing to get him the ball. It's just, it's interesting to Brad Stevens. And I got a stat here for you. He's played in 21 games. In our 14 wins with him out there, he's averaging 22.5 points a game, taking 16.3 shots. In our 7 losses, he's averaging 13 points a game, taking 11.4, which is like what he took last season. So when they treat him like they did last season, they lose. And when they treat him like, when they get him the ball this season, they win. And our head coach can't wrap his mind around this concept. You know? Mm. And, well, and this is a very straightforward thing.
Yeah, I think, I mean, some of this, you can, I mean, there's nowhere else really to place the blame other than Brad Stevens. But some of it just goes into the flow of the game. And maybe Brown takes himself out of it sometimes. Maybe it's just sort of how the game unfolds that he doesn't get his enough shots.
I understand what you're talking about, but this is really about Stevens and the steps that he runs. If you watch, he'll be on the opposite side of the floor, and it's Kemba and Jason and Gordon, in this case, passing the ball amongst themselves on one side. And if they don't reverse the ball to him, he doesn't get it. And you know what? They don't feel like it. So he falls out of it. And when it's all, you know, if you get in the most recent games when Gordon was gone, Brown was in the middle of the floor more because, you know, there's no Gordon there to take up the space, and now he's getting the ball a lot. And this is very important because, you know, it can't always be like every time you touch the ball, you have to shoot it. It's like, okay, do I have a good look here? No, I'll move it to the next guy. But you have to have these options. Tatum is always having the ball going through him, and even then he's inefficient. Meanwhile, Brown, he has to make do with very limited opportunities, and he's extremely efficient. But it's just like, they forget about him. If you don't have the ball, you can't do anything with it to begin with. And he has to have the ball.
Thanks for the call, Mike. No, it's definitely a different offense, different team when he is producing offensively. I hate to see those numbers, especially against the Sixers. That was a game that – it was a statement game for the Celtics. You can't lose that. Like it was with Kyrie and the Nets. Don't lose to the Nets. I know they beat him at TD Garden. They lost to them in Brooklyn. Don't lose that game. Don't lose to the Sixers a second time around at home. And I was disappointed to see them lose that game the way they lost that game. Texter, Drummond and Maker for Hayward and Grant Williams.
Yes.
Yes, I trade Grant Williams.
Yeah, I think he's a nice complimentary player, high-energy player, but overall he's limited. You know, he's a lesser Leon Poe. Hayward, what was it? Hayward and Grant Williams for Drummond and Thon Maker?
Yeah.
Yeah, 100%. I'll take Drummond.
I'd rather have Towns.
Well, yes, every team would rather have Towns than Drummond, but Drummond would be interesting. I like him a lot as a player. I really do. So, yeah, I would do that. It would be an interesting team. Then how do you construct it moving from there? I'd have to actually take a look at it. Tice moved down to the four.
Grant Williams is out there playing basketball.
Yes.
And I just want somebody to explain to me why he's so much more prepared to play NBA basketball than
Taco?
Yeah. What is he so much more prepared?
He's been playing basketball a hell of a lot longer than
Taco
has. So
that's it. He's played more basketball.
He's probably smarter.
Okay.
He's probably watched basketball, studied the game a lot more. Taco wasn't a basketball guy until he was like, what, 16?
Frustrates the hell
like
out of me.
You know?
Because you can't teach 7'5 or whatever he is.
But it's also coordination, too. These guys can't – Taco, in terms of some of the guys who've been that tall, he's a little more athletic then. But
– can Taco – could he disrupt – he can't disrupt Joel Embiid at all at that size?
A little bit, but not that much.
I know Joel Embiid because can make outside shots.
Yeah, because that's what I was going to say. Joel's going to just stretch it on him, then go by him. That's the problem. Like, down low, could he disrupt and make it?
Definitely.
A little bit, absolutely. But Joel Embiid's game is so advanced beyond Taco.
So he'll just bring him out to the elbow or further out and then
shoot
blow by him.
Yeah, and then now you have such a disadvantage down there because one of the reasons you want that guy is to get those defensive rebounds and then you're pulling him. It was like the Al Horford situation on the offensive side where he's so far away that he can't get those offensive rebounds and he can't get those second chance points. You're taking that on the reverse on the defensive end. You're taking him away further from the rim where it's the only place he's serviceable on a basketball court is on the defensive side close to the rim.
So why can't they switch? They switch all the time out of the pick and roll. They always switch. It's almost annoying how much guys are switching in the NBA. What's the point of having a guy guard and shut it? I mean, you can't even shut down anyone because you're always switching. Why can't, if the Celtics have that issue, why can't they switch when Joel Embiid is out, when you don't need quite as tall of a guy to cover him? Then if he tries to blow by him, Taco's down low. Switch out, let the guy who's 6'7" guard Embiid when he's out near the perimeter. Let him try to shoot over Hayward, a three. Because then the size advantage, I mean, if you're not an elite shooter, having that size advantage isn't that big a deal. It is if you're a good shooter and you can shoot over a smaller guy and it doesn't disrupt you, but is that really going to not disrupt Joel Embiid when he takes threes or long twos? Then well, if he blows
ideally,
by
that's
him,
what you want him doing.
Right.
And I'd if be, he blows I'd be by interesting him. To, I'd be interested to see what Taco can do defensively against a guy that's going to try and play a little bit more in the post. But the reality is the best big men in the league don't do that exclusively. Joel, Jokic, Anthony Towns, they're all taking outside shots.
Okay. But you can't come up with some way to guard them when they go out there. Taco Fall, Ben, is 7'6". 7'6".
I know. I'm aware.
I mean, I'm just wondering, Grant Williams.
He's right, like 6'7".
Grant Williams is 6'7". I want somebody to explain to me why what Grant Williams is able to bring to the Celtics right now, because he's playing, is that much more valuable than almost a foot. 11 inches. How is what Grant Williams can bring right now that much more valuable than another 11 inches? That's what I want to know. Because they're both rookies. Both rookies.
Yep, one's been playing a lot longer. One played at a much better program. One was the, wasn't he the SEC Player of the Year, Grant Williams?
I don't remember. Tennessee, I don't know.
I think he was. He's a better basketball player than Taco Fall. Hasn't been playing long enough, and he does not have the same, nearly the same athleticism that Grant Williams does.
No.
It just, it's almost impossible to be that tall and have that kind of athleticism.
All of those things are more important than 11 inches. That's what, I mean, that's the only thing you can conclude, right?
If you can't play.
Yeah, SEC Player of the Year, AP 2019.
Yeah.
Two-time first team All-SEC. Good player.
Good player.
Good player.
Knows how to play the game. Positionally aware. I mean,
11 inches.
I can't really tell you the answer until I see more Taco Fall in the NBA.
Yeah.
And see what legitimate big men do him. Because right now in the G League, I've only seen a little bit. He's been hurt, but I've seen a little bit. And some of the bigs in the G League are a little afraid of him. But the people that aren't are the guards for some reason. They'll drive right at him and try and drive right past him. Take advantage of his lack of athleticism, and then he's trying to reach through and use his giant arms.
He's 6 inches taller than Joel Embiid.
Okay. There's been a lot of those guys in the NBA.
Yeah.
That have been really tall.
And
there's
only
been,
dominate.
There was only one who was actually good offensively, and that was Yao Ming.
Yep.
And he was a couple inches, maybe 2 inches shorter than Taco Fall, but also been playing and been groomed to do that for a very long time.
Yeah, no, I know he's not great offensively.
Yeah, that's the thing. And there's been some of them who were very good defensively. Manupal could block some shots, but then he learned how to shoot a three at the end, so it became kind of fun to watch. Mark Eaton, a very tall guy, block shots, no offensive game whatsoever. He was a black hole offensively for you. George Mureson, best thing about him was his cologne. That wasn't even real. It was just in a Snickers ad, and it was fantastic. These guys, they're not athletic. They can't move up and down the court. They're limited in what they can do. They've got long arms, and that's the only thing that's really good about them.
But
yeah,
Gordon Hayward is a good offensive player. So I'm just trying to figure out if there was a way to keep Gordon Hayward around. I'd like to do that. And if Taco Fall could kind of help out defensively and be a force, you know, at least somewhat of a force, then maybe you keep Hayward around and you got a situation where you can keep everybody around and get a contribution from a younger guy that actually makes an impact. I mean, I'm just trying to figure it out. He's 7'6". He's 6 inches taller than Joel Embiid. All right. When we get back, we'll do the producer's question. This is the Mark and Kitchen Show, 103.7 WEEI.
We're back to Mark and Kitchen on Sports Radio 103.7 WEEI.
All right, Patriots and Bengals tomorrow, 1 o'clock. Lot to discuss in terms of the Patriots, and we did that over the course of the last 2 hours. Hopefully, next week we're discussing a little bit about how good the offense looked in Cincinnati and how they might have turned a corner. Do you think we will do that, Ben?
What?
Do you think next week we'll be talking about how the offense might have turned a corner?
Sorry.
In Cincinnati after that performance they put on the field.
We'll talk about it, but it might be fool's gold because it's Cincinnati.
See, but that's what I was saying
earlier.
But I
think you'll have seen them figure a couple of things out a little bit. And it, to me, it comes down to N'Keal Harry. That's what I'm looking for. If the running game performs well, I'm not going to be willing to say it's turned the corner. But if N'Keal Harry plays well and Tom Brady and his relationship looks a little bit different, then I will say this looks like it's heading in the right direction. The running game, I'm not going to be fooled by it against the worst run defense team in the NFL.
I'll take anything positive they can do offensively. I don't care what team, what opponent. It's on the road. That is a last year they had the Jets and the Bills the last 2 weeks, and they found a rhythm there. That's all they need to do. And with the people they have in place, Brady, McDaniels, all those guys, Edelman, White, all those guys that have been there that have won championships, if they can find a little bit of rhythm, then maybe next week at home against a better opponent, you find a little more rhythm. Then hopefully in week 17, you're still fighting for that bye, you find even more rhythm. And then you're at the playoffs, and we'll see what happens.
If they can carry it over, if they could carry a successful game tomorrow over to next weekend, at least the offense looking good against Buffalo, then I'm feeling much better because that's a very good defensive unit there in Buffalo. And it's a good team overall.
Yeah.
So that's really where my focus lies. Hopefully things look in the right direction offensively. But to me, it's N'Keal Harry. I need to see him get more involved.
All right, let's do the producer's question.
It is time for the producer's question. So here is Devin Telgani. He has a question. It won't be about sports. So here it is for Mark and Ben.
All right, fellas, this week's question of the day is, what's the worst chick flick movie that you guys have watched that you can say you actually liked?
Oh, well, Didn't we do this?
Yeah, no. It was a worst movie thing, but it's the same answer for me.
Yeah, it probably is.
John Tucker Must Die.
Yeah.
You know what I've never seen? I wonder if you've seen it. I've never seen Titanic.
We watched it in school once.
Why?
Yeah, it was like one of those deals after or right before break, right before like Christmas break, they played it.
Because the teachers didn't want to teach anymore?
Yeah.
It was like, I have nothing planned.
Like when I was in eighth grade or something.
Here's Titanic. Never seen it. It's definitely a chick.
Summer Catch is always my answer to that.
Yeah, but it's got the element of sports, so right. It kind of doesn't count.
I can give you another one, but I can't remember the name of it.
Hit me with it, though. Give me some people in it, what it was about, and I might
know. I'm sort of, because I'm a big fan of Scarlett Johansson, and she was really hot in this.
Sure. Lost in Translation with Bill Murray?
No. It was, there was a million people in it.
Oh, was this one of like the
Bradley Cooper?
Is this one of the Valentine's Day?
Yes, but it wasn't that one. It was
New Year's Eve, one of those movies.
He's not that into you. Is that what it was? Oh. He's really not that into you. He's just not that into you. Look it up.
I'll look it up.
That's probably. I actually watched that one all the way through and didn't mind it. She had a big affair with Bradley Cooper in that movie. He's really. He's just not that into you. 2009-ish, I want to say.
I'm looking. Vicky Cristina Barcelona. He's just not that into you. She played Anna.
Yes,
Anna.
That movie. That's probably the one.
Never seen it, but I understand. Sometimes
the guy from Entourage was in there. He was a loser.
The guy, Adrian Grenet, or
I don't remember
the main character from Entourage.
No, not the main character. He was like the manager.
Oh, Eric.
I think so.
His name was Eric in Entourage.
But he was like in love with Scarlett Johansson, and she was just, like, he was in the friend zone in the movie I'm talking about.
Ah, the good old friend zone. Yep, I know what you're talking about. I don't remember that kid's name.
That's probably the chick flick. I can't think of any other chick flicks that I really like. I didn't mind The Notebook.
Never seen it.
I didn't even mind it. I thought, you know what?
Boring to me.
Well, here's what I liked about The Notebook. I thought the writing. I was impressed by the writing.
Okay.
I thought the writing, I respected the writing, how they, you know, because they have the two people talking and they're old and then you put it together that it's actually the story. I thought they brought it full circle.
Does Mean Girls count as a chick flick?
That's what I was going to say also. Mean Girls with Lindsay Lohan.
Does that count?
Yeah.
I would count it.
Yeah. That's a good movie.
Yeah.
Just a straight up good movie.
Never seen that one.
Ooh, it's a good one.
Really?
Yeah, it's actually genuinely, there's some
is this before,
genuinely
like,
funny
Lindsay
moments.
Lindsay Lohan went crazy?
Yes, this was prime Lindsay Lohan.
This is
when she was
Lindsay
a cute
Lohan.
Little Irish girl?
Like 2 or 3 years before she went psycho.
Yeah.
It was her, Rachel McAdams.
Yeah.
The young girl from Party of Five, who turned into a very good looking woman. and Bug Eyes from Ted 2.
Okay.
What's her name?
Oh.
Blonde chick from Ted 2.
What year was this one out? Oh, five?
Something okay. like that? 05, 06, 04?
Okay.
Tina Fey wrote it.
Okay.
So, you know it's I mean, I'm not going to check that
funny.
One out,
but
why?
If it's on, I'll watch it. It's
legitimately
funny. I'm not going to go seek out Mean Girls.
It's good. It's good.
It's good.
It's good. Okay. And the girls in it are all smoke shows.
It's true.
So,
I thought Lindsay Lohan was good looking before she went crazy.
She was great looking.
Go watch the video Rumors. She had a song called Rumors.
Yeah, that was after Mean Girls. It was.
Yeah, she was a little older there, but she was that was like, I felt like right before it all went awry. And she was good looking in that
video. I blame Wilmer Valderrama for ruining her.
I think it's Jessica Birth, the one that you're thinking about from Ted 2. No?
No. No, I can't. Maybe it wasn't Ted 2. Maybe it was A Million Ways to Die in the West, the other Seth MacFarlane movie.
You're such a movie buff. You know so many movies. You know so many titles. You don't know album names of music.
At all.
No.
I can't do album names in any way, shape, or form because it just never mattered to me. But Christ, why can't I think of her name? She's gorgeous with ridiculous eyes. I'm going to find it. Maybe kill some time here.
Those are the other chick flicks. I'm trying to think of another chick flick I can.
Amanda Seyfried. That's who she is.
Yep, I just looked. Yep.
Yeah.
I don't watch many chick flicks.
I don't really either. And Liz likes action movies.
No.
Which makes it great because last night it was like, hey, do you want to watch Angel Has Fallen? It's a terrible movie.
I'll tell you
one. Or Hobbs and Shaw.
Can I tell you one more? I'll tell you one more. I got one more.
Yeah.
Is Gray. What's the guy's name? The books, Gray.
Oh, 50 Shades of Gray?
50 Shades of Gray. Is that a chick flick?
Oh, yeah, 100%.
I love that chick flick.
Really? I've never seen it.
You know, you want to know why? Because it can get them in the mood.
Okay. So you and your woman are into some, like, kinky
stuff. Sex. I think one time. No, but.
You like whips and chains and bondage?
No. But one time, I think we watched that on, like, Valentine's Day,
mm-hmm.
and it got steamy.
Should have anyway.
So I always have a soft spot for that movie because it got steamy while watching it.
You should know her soft spots without having to watch that movie.
I already knew them.
You've been married long enough.
Yeah, I know.
My only experience with 50 Shades of Grey is I was on a flight. I was on a flight and there was this like 85-year-old man who had like an 82-year-old wife.
Yeah.
They were sitting across the aisle. Like, yeah, I was being nice, helping them put their stuff up there because they're old. And I'm watching this guy and he's got a blanket over his lap. He's old, so you figure, oh, that's normal. Old people have blankets over their laps because it's cold, bad circulation, whatever. And as I look over, and I'm watching whatever dumb movie I'm watching, and I see this guy, he's intently watching 50 Shades of Grey, and it's not like it's a TNT version where it's sanitized. This was like the real deal, and I'm like, these are some pretty ridiculous sex scenes, and this guy is engrossed in it.
Jeez.
And I'm like, that's why he's got the blanket over his lap. He's not cold.
Okay.
Have you guys ever seen Bridesmaids or Mamma Mia?
No. Mamma Mia, certainly not. Bridesmaids I actually haven't seen, but I heard it was pretty damn funny. It's more in the line of like the Hangover type movies.
It was really
right?
funny, yeah.
Yeah.
Bridesmaids.
There you go.
All right.
Show's over.
I think we're going to see a better Patriots offense. Until I don't see it, I'm going to expect to see it. Does that make any sense?
Yes.
I expect to see some kind of turnaround. I expect to see it. We'll see if we see it Sunday, 1 o'clock. What's next? Hart and James?
Mark and Hart.
All right.
Mark with a C.
It's the Mark and Kitchen Show with a K, 103.7 WEI.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.